Unit 10, Science Report. Text for interpretation. Passage 1. Chinese English interpretation. Text interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
女士们，先生们，我很高兴在这里向各位简单介绍一下我国的传统医学及中医。中医起源于6000年前的神农氏时代，这位著名的中国古代药王所生活的时代被认为是中医史上的萌芽阶段。战国时期的中医理论著作《黄帝内经》标志着中国医学独特的理论体系的形成，《黄帝内经》至今仍然被视为指导中医的理论基础。中医名著《神农本草经》总结了秦朝前的经验，共载药物365种，按主治、功用和毒性分成三大类，是中国的一部历史最悠久的药典。中医学在长期的发展过程中，逐渐形成了一整套医学原则和观点。首先，中医认为万物人为贵，中医将救死扶伤视为职业道德规范。第二，中医注重无病防病，强调以食补保健来延缓衰老，减少疾病。第三，中医理论认为社会环境与自然环境相互作用，相互依存，人的身心也是一种相互作用、互为依存的关系。人体是由各种器官和不同功能系统组成的有机整体，因此中医师是通过了解人与自然、人与社会、人体与心理之间的关系，以及人体各部位之间的种种关系，来诊断病人的疾病。第四，中医学认为，阴与阳存在于人体内，相互作用，互为依存。根据中医的哲学观，阴阳两者对立制约，互根互用，消长平衡，相互转化。阴阳平衡是健康的要素，阴阳失衡会影响健康，导致疾病。因此中医十分重视调节阴阳，以保平衡。最后，中医认为人体内的系列运动贯穿于人的一生，这种系列运动在西医叫做新陈代谢。如果这种运动受阻，就会出现异常情况，人就会得病。这是中医关于疾病防治的一个指导思想。在长期的实践和发展中，中医形成了一个以中草药为核心的完整独立的理论体系和疗效独特的临床治疗方法。除了中草药外，还包括针灸疗法、按摩推拿和气功疗法。今天，中医以其独特的疗效和科学本质，赢得了全世界的广泛赞誉。我国积极发展中医，鼓励中西医结合诊断和治疗。目前，全国各地约有2500家中医医院，拥有一支50多万人的中医专业队伍。在中国100万家综合医院中，大部分都设有中医部。此外，全国还有100多家中医机构和研究中心。我相信我国的中医研究前程似锦。
Passage 2. English Chinese Interpretation. Text Interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am very happy to meet with so many scholars at this annual astrobiology conference in the beautiful city of San Francisco. I am also very happy that we will be discussing some of the big issues, like where we came from and whether we have companions beyond Earth. Here I'd like to share with you some of our recent discoveries. As regards the origin of life on Earth, we used to believe that when life began on Earth, the atmosphere contained nitrogen, hydrogen, and other gases, but no oxygen. Consequently, the sun's rays prevented life from developing on land. That explained why the first living organisms developed only under the sea. Under the influence of photosynthesis, the oxygen in the atmosphere increased and life expanded. Complex living organisms developed. As the oxygen in the atmosphere increased, life, which depends on the equilibrium of the atmosphere, was possible on the surface of the Earth. Recently, we have come up with a very different hypothesis. We believe that hundreds of millions of years ago, a meteor crashed into a then lifeless planet. Embedded in the meteor were carbon compounds that were to become the seeds of all life on Earth. Our current hypothesis is that there was a seedling from elsewhere. Let's say a meteor that had originated in Mars landed in the Antarctic, and it contained evidence of life. We often ask why we are here, how life started, and if we are alone in the universe. These fundamental questions are often addressed by religion and by our sense of aesthetics, by spiritual feelings, feelings of values. But I think science can contribute to the best answers to these questions. In general, scientists are responsible to inform the public, to find out what they want, and to answer the questions that the public wants to know about nature. Last month, we observed the Leonid meteor showers, which occur in every November when Earth passes through the debris shed by the comet Temple-Tuttle. We were aboard two U.S. Air Force craft that flew at night from the United Kingdom to Israel, then back through the Azores to Florida. The path allowed us to observe the meteors, some no bigger than a grain of sand, from an altitude of 11.5 kilometers. Images of the meteors were fed through infrared spectrographic instruments that can detect the unique chemical fingerprints of complex organic molecules of the type that may have seeded life on Earth. Our spectrographic instruments caught a meteor in the act of disseminating organic molecules. We have a list of perhaps 100 carbon-containing compounds that have been identified. These are the building blocks of life. We use the term prebiotic life to describe them. So that is a major interest of astrobiology, to search for the chemicals that exist in the universe outside of Earth that could lead to life, probably in some sort of continuous process. We may ask ourselves if we are ready, psychologically, to accept the possibility of life elsewhere. We must recognize that what we're doing is simply part of the trend that began with Copernicus and Galileo, who first showed us that Earth is not the center of the universe? That, and later discoveries that our galaxy is one of billions, with countless possibilities for life, indicates that we're part of something truly grand in every sense of that word. That's all for my presentation. Thank you for your attention.
Extra text for practice. Passage 1. Chinese English interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
女士们，先生们，几百年来，中国向全世界传播了其在五千年的历史长河中所积累的医疗保健知识。今日，中国的传统保健方法，如太极拳、气功和按摩等，正日益显示其重要性。中国人认为，太极是天地万物之根源。太极分为阴阳二气，阴阳二气产生木、火、土、金、水这五行。五行代表或作用于人体器官，即火对心，木对肝，土对脾胃，金对肺，水对肾。阴阳化合而生万物，太极则代表了阴阳调和。据《易经》记载，保持身心平衡是健康的要素。中医理论著作《黄帝内经》开卷第一章提出了心神怡然以保气防病的理论，这一理论已成为当今气功健身研究的基础理论。太极拳、气功和按摩这健身三法，就是以《易经》和《黄帝内经》提出的理论为基础的。长期以来，世界只知道中国有指南针、火药、造纸和活字印刷四大发明，几乎很少有人知道，中国已经发现了经络的存在。经络是指人体内气血运行通路的主干与分支网络，针刺穴位散布其间。北京经络研究中心通过现代科学方法已经证实了经络的存在。经络的发现无疑是为《易经》和《黄帝内经》的理论提供了强有力的佐证。今天世界各地学打太极拳、学做气功以及学习按摩的人越来越多，这些健身之法不仅对人体健康有效，而且对心脑健康、性功能健康以及减肥都有很好的疗效。
Passage 2 English Chinese Interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
My topic today is the car and air pollution. In particular, I want firstly to discuss the ways in which the car causes air pollution, and secondly, how we can control or reduce air pollution from the car. First, then, how does the car cause air pollution? What happens is that the car's internal combustion engine is a kind of chemical factory on a small scale. It uses a mixture of petrol and air, and this mixture explodes and burns to produce the energy which propels the car. But while this is happening, many complicated chemical reactions are taking place. In particular, part of the petrol-air mixture is not completely burned up, and so the exhaust gases from the engine contain some very dangerous chemicals, such as carbon monoxide, nitrogen oxides, lead, and hydrocarbons. This is the situation then, and it's going to get much worse unless we do something about it. So, let's focus our attention now on ways of controlling or reducing the amount of air pollution caused by the car. I want to mention five possibilities. First, we can discourage the use of cars. For example, we can put higher taxes on petrol and on cars themselves, especially the larger ones that use a lot of petrol. Second, we can encourage alternative methods of transport, both between and within urban areas. For instance, we can make train and bus services cheaper and more convenient. And we can build a mass transit system in large cities, particularly an underground railway system such as those in London, New York, Moscow, and Tokyo. Next, we can use a different and cleaner fuel for the internal combustion engine. Possibilities in this regard include natural gas, fuel cells, i.e. batteries, and liquid hydrogen. Fourth, we can replace the present internal combustion engine with other designs. There are several possibilities being researched at present, such as electric, gas turbine, and steam engines. However, each of these engine designs has its own disadvantages. Last but not least, we are trying to control the emissions from the internal combustion engine much more strictly. This, for example, is a catalytic converter, which converts the most dangerous ingredients of the car exhaust into water and harmless gases. These are five possible ways, then, of controlling air pollution caused by cars. As I'm sure you can see, there are problems with each of these ways, but at least they're a step in the right direction. Probably the best answer is a synthesis of all five.
Passage 3. Chinese English Interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
野生大熊猫的数目已不足1000只。 大熊猫濒临绝迹。 拯救国宝大熊猫已成为中国人民的共同心愿。最近，我们将大熊猫体细胞的一个细胞核植入一个兔子的去核卵子里，培育出一个大熊猫胚胎。现在，我们将精力集中在克隆大熊猫的第二步上，即把胚胎植入另一只动物的子宫里生长。 自20世纪90年代初以来，我们用人工受精的方法增加大熊猫数量，也就是说，我们通过注入性激素，控制母本的体温和排卵期，以得到卵子，然后让父本的精子与母本的卵子结合，培植新的生命。在过去的6年中，我们用这种方法。 以繁殖出6对双胞胎和7个单胞胎。但是，就整个大熊猫家族的命运来说，人工受精的方法远未令人满意。此外，通常大熊猫产生的卵子和精子数量很少，所以当雌性大熊猫无法交配时，这种方法也就起不了作用。1997年。 开始实施一个更为雄心勃勃的计划——克隆大熊猫。1998年，中国科学院在这个项目上投入了专款，并在1999年得到了科学技术部的资助。这项实验旨在将大熊猫体细胞的细胞核植入去核卵子，以造就一个全新的生命。我们注意到。 畸形、死胎和夭折现象经常发生在克隆动物身上。统计数字显示，在自然分娩中，畸形胚胎基因不到1%，试管婴儿的畸形胚胎基因为15%， 而克隆动物的畸形胚胎基因为50%。真正的问题是克隆大熊猫的第二步，即在另一种动物的子宫里培育新的大熊猫。目前我们还无法肯定哪一种动物是理想的代母体。也许你会问，胚胎既然是在兔子的卵子里培养的，那么兔子应该是母体。然而问题是，兔子的子宫对于大熊猫幼体来说实在太小了。此外，大熊猫的妊娠期为87天至170天，而兔子的妊娠期却不到30天，兔子怎能怀上大熊猫？另一个问题是，即使大熊猫克隆出来，它只有亲本的 DNA， 因此在某种程度上，克隆方法是无法保护大熊猫的。如果幼体大熊猫与代母亲一起生活，比如说与狗母亲或熊母亲一起生活，学习母亲的行为和习性，那么它只能成为一只有着大熊猫身体的狗或熊。如果是这样的话，克隆大熊猫还有什么意义呢？不管怎样，克隆大熊猫还是引起了人们的极大兴趣。无情的事实是，大熊猫的繁殖能力太弱，大熊猫已濒临灭绝。当然，克隆大熊猫并不意味着取代大熊猫的自然繁殖，恰恰相反，克隆只是对自然繁殖和人工繁殖的一种补充。我们认为，只要克隆方法有利于保护大熊猫，我们就要尝试。即使我们获得一个克隆的大熊猫，我们仍然需要做更多的实验来完善克隆技术。克隆技术目前仍处于研究阶段，而不是生产阶段。我们科学家所要做的是在实验中学习，通过学习改进我们的研究。克隆大熊猫是发展和改进克隆技术的一种方法，这种方法一旦成功，可以用来拯救其他一些濒临灭绝的动物。当然，我们还应该充分意识到，大熊猫生存的主要威胁不是来自于大熊猫的繁殖能力，而是来自于人类对大熊猫自然生态环境的破坏，这是任何一种克隆技术都无法弥补的。我国政府早已明令禁止在长江中上游砍伐树木，这对保护大熊猫及其生态环境无疑是一个良好的开端。随着大熊猫的自然生态环境的不断改善，随着克隆技术的不断完善，大熊猫一定会生存下去。我们对大熊猫的未来充满信心。
Passage 4. English-Chinese interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese. Traditional Chinese medicine says that good health is associated with the balance of qi, an energy force that flows through the body. Qi can be hindered or helped by yin and yang.Opposing forces that, when balanced, work harmoniously together. According to traditional theory, the goal of acupuncture is to promote the flow of qi by keeping yin and yang in balance. And this is done by inserting needles at various points along primary channels and meridians that crisscross the body.In China, acupuncture is used to alleviate post-operative pain. Medical experts believe that inserting needles into the body at precise points can stimulate nerves that cause the brain to release its natural pain-killing chemicals. There is sufficient evidence in the literature that shows a positive effect between the technique of acupuncture itself stimulating these acupuncture points in the skin, and the release of substances in the brain which we know to be associated with the relief of pain. The U.S. National Institute of Health has endorsed acupuncture for treating certain types of nausea, vomiting, and pain, such as the nausea sort of sickness that a patient suffers when given an anesthetic for surgery or treated with chemotherapy, or the vomiting or nausea that accompanies pregnancy or post-operative dental pain. We have come to the very clear-cut sort of decision that treatment under these circumstances really works. Our principal concern in evaluating acupuncture's effectiveness has been the so-called placebo effect, the possibility that beneficial outcomes derive not from the treatment itself, but from the patient's belief that it works. We got around the problem by measuring brain chemistry during acupuncture. Drugs were administered to block the brain's natural opiates while the patient was undergoing needle stimulation. As a result of the opiate blockage, the acupuncture had no effect in stopping pain, proving that there is a physiological mechanism to acupuncture that goes beyond mere belief. Acupuncture is widely employed in easing cravings and withdrawal pains of heroin addicts. 40% of the drug courts in the United States use acupuncture as part of their therapy. In the Miami system alone, there are close to 400 treatments per day. In some countries, such as Sweden, the doctors have had success with acupuncture in treating the effects of stroke. Those stroke patients getting acupuncture along with physical therapy did a lot better than those getting physical therapy alone. Studies show that one of the key benefits of acupuncture that seems to be emerging from various studies is that it has few, if any, side effects, and that when used with standard drug treatment, in anesthesia, for example, it allows physicians to cut back on medication, delivering the same level of benefit with fewer negative effects.